Hello, Bonsai friends. This is Evan Pardue of Underhill Bonsai, and welcome to episode 79 of Little Things for Bonsai People. It is the year of the Wood Dragon, 2024, and this time I am not joined by any of my show hosts. It's just me on this one, and the reason being is because I've been wanting to do a solo podcast episode for a good while now. I wanted to go back and just kind of look back on the history of the show a little bit with you guys and talk about myself a little bit. I know there's going to be a lot of new listeners since the very beginning, and I know there's other people who have listened ever since the show was called Bonsai Southeast, which is amazing. Before I get into talking about the experiences that I've had, and of course, I want to recap Bonsai Central. There's going to be audio at the end of this episode of some stuff in the field of me talking to Tyler Sarad. There's going to be a conversation where Nate talks with a gentleman named Daryl. I didn't catch his last name, but he had some background in history with his experiences working with Von Banting and going out and collecting with Von. And then also Joel Jenkins, one of our Bonsai best buds, who also assisted me on the Bonsai Central trip, is in this recording as well, talking with Nate about a Shohin display that he enjoyed. There's also me and Nate talking about a deciduous tree that was on display in the main expo, and we did not know that it was actually going to be the winner of the best deciduous tree on display. So you can hear us kind of give a raw critique and a kind of first look at the tree, and that tree will be on our Instagram. You can see a picture of it posted there with the description saying episode 79, and you can see what me and Nate were looking at, as well as the Shohin display. If I have a good picture of it, I'll post that as well. And then at the end, there's a recording where I talked to Jesse. Jesse was the showrunner of Bonsai Central, and we spoke with him and Nathan on a earlier episode of just strictly about Bonsai Central, the development and the setup for the show and all that. So, but before I go any further, start rambling on here, I do need to mention that our show is sponsored by our amazing patrons over on patreon.com/littlethingsforabonsaipeople. You can go over there and become a Bonsai best bud or a Bonsai friend and support us at whatever level you choose. And so in the past, I've had so many Bonsai best buds sign up that I am doing the shout out at the end of the episode now. But we do have our new Bonsai friend. We do Bonsai best friend shout outs. You know, you get your name shouted out just one time. It's a $1 commitment per month, but it's still amazing that you signed up at this level. Thank you so much, Angel Niblock, for signing up to be a Bonsai new friend. And then we have our featured best bud, which is going to be Snappy Chappers, which is David Barbe. It's a friend of mine. We go back a little ways. We used to work at the Renaissance Festival together. So how's it going, David? And then we have, of course, our main show sponsor, Joshua Roth Tools. John over at Joshua Roth supporting the show. It's awesome. Thank you so much. And then our specimen best buds that always get a shout out at the beginning and the end on Ryu Inn, Bonsai Garden, Australia, Christina Corforia, and Bill's Bayou anchoring down the specimen buds there. And then I can't go much further without talking about Matt O'Donnell, our editor. He makes us sound smart. He cleans up the audio and makes us enjoyable to listen to. You can go over to mattodonnell.com, fill out his contact form or email him. I need to go check on his email to see exactly how he would prefer people to contact him in the future. I know I had a discussion with him recently where that's apparently not the case. There's not a contact form there, but I'm sure his email is there. So if you guys want to contact him to start your own podcast show, and it doesn't have to be a Bonsai show, it could be anything, or you want to work on audio engineering projects, because that's what he does. He's a set bass player in Nashville, Tennessee, and he's all around awesome guy. Always say that. It's not in the script. Oh, actually it is in the script. I'm sorry. It's in the script. So I say it every single time. And also Matt has his own show called Matt O'Donnell Wants to Know. Go check out his podcast show as well. But like I was saying, I wanted to just kind of recap a little bit of stuff about myself and about our show here, about Little Things and about the history. And I know a lot of people may be tuning in for the first time. I know that whenever certain people listen to podcasts that they either listen to a podcast from the very beginning and they kind of start from, you know, episode zero and on, depending on how the podcast is formatted, or they'll just click on the newest thing that they see as far as current information goes, or they'll just go in and they'll choose a topic at random that podcast covered that they think is neat and they'll listen to it. So if you're new here, welcome to the show. Like I said in the very beginning, my name is Evan Pardue. I am a nursery manager and basically a bonsai farmer at Underhill Bonsai. I'm located in Folsom, Louisiana. I actually live in Hammond, Louisiana, which is roughly about 45 minutes, like if you're driving slower, to get over here. And Hammond is a really awesome little town. It's, you know, I have to describe where it's at to a lot of people, because it's a lot of people know where Hammond, Louisiana is. And then some people kind of like, oh, and I have to give some geographic information to kind of locate the town. But it's a lovely little town. It's a railroad town just northwest. Yeah, that's right. Northwest of Lake Pontchartrain, which would be on the other side of the lake from New Orleans. So New Orleans is on the south shore is what we call it. And we are on the north shore. There's a little bit of confusion there because people who are from New Orleans call the West Bank the West Bank, and they call the South Shore and the North Shore of the river, of the Mississippi River, all the different geographical areas there in the city. But for the people that live up here, we just call it the North Shore because we're on the North Shore of Lake Pontchartrain. And Lake Pontchartrain is our biggest lake in Louisiana. It's that big giant just blue dot at the near the heel of the boot that is Louisiana and in the United States here. It is a semi-tropical, sometimes tropical, mostly temperate zone. So a lot of stuff that I grow here is going to be this. It's an ongoing joke. It's a running joke with my other podcast host, but I say bald cypress a lot. So everything that's swampy, humid, and somewhat tropical, but not quite, more deciduous habit type trees grow for me really well. So I'm growing stuff like bald cypress, of course, American elm species such as cedar elm, winged elm, American elm, and water elm. Those are like my four main ones that I target all over here in my area. And then I have a couple of acers, which maples. I can grow a couple of different maples in our area. And then we have other beautiful species like hackberry, Celtis varieties, and also American hornbeam. But those are just some of the natives that I'm messing around with here as far as deciduous stock, which is my concentration. Whereas our good friend Mike Lane, he is a tropical specialist. He loves Shohin tropicals, and he goes up to Khifu size. Recently, he's been experimenting with larger size bonsai. Not experimenting, but he's going back to his quote-unquote roots, going to us medium-sized trees recently with tropical varieties. And then, of course, Carmen Lesko-Viensky, she is a Midwesterner, so she gets a little bit more of a cooler environment, so she can get some more broadleaf evergreens, more pines, more conifers than I can, where it's a little too hot for the stuff that it's kind of like this weird medium zone where it's a little too hot for stuff that I have here. I'm in zone 8 to 9. Depending on how my summer goes, it could be hot and dry, it could be rainy and humid, it just depends. But a lot of alpine species are zones lower than mine hate it here. The nights are not cool enough for those trees, whereas with Mike is in South Florida, so he's in like zone 10 and above. It's like tropical as you can get. He's really close to the Florida Keys and I forgot the name of the town. I think it might be Naples, Florida. Who knows if I'm, you know, some people, if you're in Florida and you know, but that's very tropical. So everything and anything that basically doesn't need a dormancy period can be super happy where Mike lives and operates. So yeah, and Underhill has been in business. For those who are curious about Underhill, it's been in business for roughly about 5 years. I've been here for basically the entirety of that. So it was actually a nursery that was developed and started by Douglas Green. He is a attorney consultant, just straight out, like, just tell you guys, you know, who he is. You can look him up on Facebook. He's a friend of mine on Facebook. You can go see that. He comments on things on Facebook every once in a while when it comes to stuff related to the nursery. And Doug's been in Bonsai for easily over 30 years now, and in and out here and there, has done Bonsai seriously since, you know, the late 80s and going through the 90s. And then Katrina hit Louisiana, and that was kind of a setback for us. And so Katrina hit August 2005, and that actually set back a lot of other people that do bonsai as well. And it's kind of hard to believe that as many trees died, not just landscape trees or trees in our, you know, our woodlands and like local woodlands and stuff or forests, but also a lot of bonsai people lost their collections, lost their bonsai trees to Katrina because of lack of electricity, clean water. You know, a lot of the people down in New Orleans in the Metairie area, which is where Doug lived, didn't have access to basically good water. And so it was just seawater and brackish water that was washed up into their water source. And so they were watering their trees with salt water and killing them. And there was nothing they could do. People who were running off of well pumps just didn't have electricity to run their wells. So it was either keep your family fed and get water, fresh water to your family, or water your bonsai. And, you know, sometimes things like this happen. And so that actually set a lot of people back, and it really did discourage Doug and a lot of other people at that time from doing bonsai for a while. And years of just like building up material and growing trees. And we all know getting into bonsai, for those beginners out there, bonsai is not something that happens overnight. It's something that takes years and years of commitment, takes years and years of collecting materials and collecting pottery, getting good bonsai soil and wire and tools and other resources together, and creating your dream bonsai collection, whether it be a few trees or 100 trees or, you know, 1,000 trees. Some people get really overboard with it. Or if you're operating a bonsai nursery like we do here, we have a lot of stock like that. And so taking a blow like that definitely will set people back, discourages a lot of people. So it took a little while for the New Orleans bonsai scene to come back. And all the while, we did have Guy Guidry here operating his original nursery back before Underhill was in operation. Guy had to actually shut down his operations. I can't remember exactly the time frame, but he did move around a little bit. He did operate out of New Orleans for a little while. And this was after the events of Katrina. So Guy had been doing bonsai. I remember my first time going to his nursery. And this was well over 10 years ago now. I can't even remember exactly that date or the time. But he had been still kicking and doing his thing, because Guy was fortunate enough to be on the north shore of the lake. And the biggest hit that Katrina took was on the south shore in New Orleans. So Guy still had his trees, but he did close operations and started doing bonsai for himself and chose to just get away from that. And so there was a gap for a moment, and Doug, feeling like he was ready to step back into bonsai, decided that not only did he want to get back into it, but he wanted to go full force, and he wanted to open his own nursery. And he was running his own nursery in his backyard, and he was calling it Underhill. And Underhill, for those that I've talked to, some of y'all know already, but those who are new to the name and aren't familiar, Underhill is actually a reference to Lord of the Rings. It's a Lord of the Rings reference to when Frodo goes to the Prancing Pony and is seeking out Gandalf. And instead of Gandalf being there like he expected him to be, he's not there, of course. And the name that he gives to the barkeep or the innkeeper, I think it's just going to be the innkeeper for those real Tolkien fans out there. But for that being said, that his incognito name is named to hide who he was, so that, you know, if the word got around that Frodo Baggins was around, he used Underhill. And Underhill also goes back to the Hobbit, which is what the dwarves would lovingly call Bilbo Baggins. And so the reason why the reason why Doug had come to Underhill originally too is that his house is actually built into the side of a little kind of built up hill, and it isolates, not isolates, but it insulates. There we go. It insulates part of his home, and it helps with heat regulation and cooling and stuff like that. And it's a pretty nifty, really innovative way to build your home. And there's not a lot of people that do that here in New Orleans because of flooding and groundwater issues. Jokingly, his kids called the nursery operation Underhill, because he's technically under a hill. And so it was a simple thing where he was just selling trees and shipping a few things, and he was kind of building up stock, and he was thinking about expanding. And then he actually purchased 10 acres of land, which is about 5 minutes from where he's at in the Folsom area here. And this is not Folsom prison area. That's in California. Folsom is a little town. It used to be actually it was a vacation town of sorts for people who lived down in the city in New Orleans. They would drive up across the lake, and they would have a lot of vacation homes out in this area, because it's just what it sounds like. It's very country, very out in the open. I mean, at night, there's not a lot of light pollution out here, even still with people moving into this area. You can look up and see the stars for miles. It's a very beautiful, wide open area. Lots of old trees, longleaf pine savanna areas all around. And of course, rolling pastures now of cows and farms and horse ranches and stuff like that. And so he bought 10 acres over here and then built the nursery that is here today. And he was operating it for a short while, and he did have somebody else working here before me, but that person was not necessarily enthusiastic about running a bonsai nursery. They just thought it would be a good job to have, you know, somebody who had some horticulture background but wasn't necessarily invested in the bonsai side. And for those who work in bonsai that are listening to this show, we'll definitely know that if you don't have the drive to work in bonsai, then working in a bonsai nursery or curating a collection or anything like that would just not make any sense to some people. You got to really be in it. You have to be interested. You have to want to do it. And I was in kind of like my background. I've shared a little bit of history on Matt's show whenever he had me as a guest on there, talking about how I've been doing it for a good while, and I was doing it in my backyard for a while. I was, you know, I had a collection of bonsai since I was, I think it was like 20 or 21. And I just had a collection of plants that I was, you know, experimenting with and reading a lot of articles and pursuing to meet different bonsai artists that I looked up to that I admired. So I met Guy. I met Eric Weigert, and then I met Arthur Jura and a couple of other miscellaneous artists that I looked up to as well. And it just wasn't a thing at that time for me. It was just kind of something that I practiced in my backyard. And I did have a small collection of plants. And it wasn't necessarily, and I say plants because it wasn't necessarily what it is now, where I have a collection of bonsai. I have like an actual bonsai garden. And so, I mean, just to be transparent with y'all, I mean, I had nursery pots, like just regular nursery containers with things that I dreamt of becoming bonsai and building a collection and doing these things. And so I did this for quite some time leading up to kind of circle back around to Doug opening the nursery here. And then all of a sudden, he didn't have someone to run the nursery. And so I was actually at a bonsai show in Baton Rouge, and which is our state capital here in Louisiana. And they call themselves the Louisiana Bonsai Society because it's the state capital. So they have the right to do that. But it's a lovely club. They have a really strong old core membership where they have people that have been in the club for like 20, 30 years now. It's pretty insane, the commitment level of some of the members in this club. And they always put on a show in the spring, and they also do a fall show. And so I believe I was at the spring show that they do, and they have all the members bring in their bonsai, and they put them in these little cubby holes that are in the garden center. So they meet up at a garden center in the middle of the city park in Baton Rouge. And these little cubby hole things that flip out, they put out tables in the building and set up little formal displays. And I'm not saying like, not belittling this at all, just saying little, like as in a lot of the trees are on the smaller side because of space. And with, when it comes to bonsai clubs, if you're part of a club, you know that it's usually encouraged that people who are more beginner level to intermediate level show their trees at these types of things, which I really love. I thrive in these type of those types of environments. I love seeing new, fresh bonsai and takes on how people are practicing and what we can help them to further their experiences. And this is before I've got to where I am now, of course, but I was at the garden center for their spring show, and I was looking at a couple of trees, and the long time, probably, I think he's a charter member, I think. I can't remember if that's true or not, but he has to be. So Lowell Tilly of the Baton Rouge Club. For some people who have been through New Orleans, Baton Rouge area, may have met him. He's an older gentleman. He's taller, heavier set. He's got his hair is white. I've always known his hair is white, and he's always kind of has like this nice little wavy hair style that he does with his hair. He's a really nice guy. And he was walking around, and he overheard me talking to my was at the time girlfriend, Caitlin, my wife now. We were talking about a bonsai that I thought was really interesting, and for some reason we got onto this topic where Lowell walked up to me and he said, "There's this bonsai nursery out in Folsom that is struggling, and he's like, I really wish the best for them, and we really need a good nursery in Louisiana." And I was like, why haven't I heard of this place? Because at the time, I was seeking out every avenue of learning how to do bonsai possible. So I of course, looked it up instantly. I was like, okay, what is this place called? Again, on Facebook, and there's Underhill Bonsai. And I had looked them up that day, and then I followed it, and I kind of was like poking around. And then within that day, it was some kind of weird fate thing that Doug got on to the Facebook page for Underhill and posted that he needed help at this nursery and he was looking to hire somebody. And at the time I was doing HVAC or AC work in Louisiana, which that is pretty decent money. And if you do HVAC or AC, I've met quite a few guys that do that. Of course, I was in the field for about 5 years or so. I think it was like four. I can't remember. It's not important. But I was doing service technician work. I had done the grunt work, the install work for AC, and I was like, if I could get a job in bonsai, I would leave this in a heartbeat because it's hard work. It was very taxing. It was good money, but it's very hard on your body. It's very hot. And in Louisiana in particular, it gets so hot here that it's reported like almost every year you hear of some poor guy dying in someone's attic because of the heat exhaustion. It's scary here. And so I decided to roll up there and see what that was all about because it was a job offering. And I said, I met Doug and I was like, hey, I would love to do this. And he's like, well, you're kind of the only person out there that's reached out to me. And he was like, you're pretty serious. It seems like, he's like, can I see some of your bonsai? And I was showing him pictures of stuff that I had done. And you know, he liked what I was doing. And he said, you honestly could be a good fit for this. Let's see how this goes. And so, the hardest part wasn't starting the job here. What the hardest thing was telling my boss that I was at the AC company with. That was the hardest thing that I had ever done, was telling him that I was quitting, because he was an amazing boss and he took really good care of me and he had a lot of time invested in me. And so when I went to go tell my boss at the AC company that I was leaving, it was actually an emotional moment for me, because I was like, you know, it sucks, but I have to see what this is about. And so I left my AC job and came here and sat down at the nursery and just had this whole life change thing where I was like, okay, now what? And a lot of things changed really quickly. I mean, not only did, you know, what I was getting paid and my schedule and everything changed just right on the dot. I mean, I started started working here and it's kind of just left to my own devices. Like there's no map, there's no guide to do this job as a bonsai nurseryman. So it's pretty stressful trying to figure out what's going to happen next. What do I need to do? And it's just been a lot of field research and doing a lot of literally field research, just to be a little punny here, but trying to figure out what I need to do and where I need to be at just as, at any given moment to make sure that the nursery is successful. Do I need to go to this convention? Do I need to go to this plant sale? Do I need to go give this talk over here? Do I need to do a workshop at the nursery? What do I need to take into propagation? What plants do we order? What kind of pottery do I carry? What do I do for tools? What do we do for wire? And when people come in and ask me questions about particular trees and species, and I had to teach myself all these things very rapidly. I had a good amount of information and it was kind of like going to college, but it was like bonsai community college online, because I was reading all these articles and on doing all this research and watching all these YouTube videos and practicing these things at home. But whenever I had to put it to real world bonsai nursery like experiences, I had to accelerate. So I went from being that guy that was doing bonsai as a hobby and then went professional pretty quickly. And I just decided I'm going to embrace this. And so I poured everything into it. And I mean, I think back whenever I was in high school and even in early college, whenever I was trying to do like the communications classes in college, or I dreaded giving speeches, I dreaded giving presentations. I mean, I would choke up, I would get cold sweats. And I mean, I still do that now. Like if I stand up in front of a group of brand new people I've never presented in front of before, it is very daunting. It gives me this like cold, kind of like sudden like feeling. And then it just kind of goes away. Now it's much quicker. And not everybody's personality is to talk in front of people. And I never thought I would be that guy, but now I can't seem to shut up. It's something that I laugh about a lot. I find myself at demonstrations and workshops and stuff like that, where I've had to give myself a timer where I'm like, okay, I've got 2 hours to get this done. And sometimes I have so much to say. And then I started the podcast. And so fast forward a little bit, I started the podcast. Let me pull up. I'm going to get on my phone really quick. That's something that we do because we're a professional podcast here, of course. We go down to the very first release of the very first episode. This is pretty impressive, actually. I did not know this. Like the honest time that we put into this, the very first episode of the show was released back in 2021. And so that was like, what, 3 years ago now? It's insane. And I know we did a revamp a year ago where I changed the format and the show and the name and everything. But back in the day, for those who are into listening to podcasts, or if you're one of those listeners that have been listening from the very beginning, that is so, I can't express how awesome that is. Hearing someone walk up and say, I've been listening to your show since the first episode, since day one. And I'm like, that's really cool. And I know that bonsai podcasts are rare and they're far in between, and there's some really high quality bonsai podcasts out there and y'all should go check them out. Just look up, you know, I've just list off some other really awesome ones really quick. The ones I can think of off the top of my head is Modern Bonsai Podcasts with Josh Hassoun, I think was his last name, Australian gentleman. Bonsai Time with their crew. You also have the Bonsai Wire with the Pacific Northwest crew. You have, of course, Asymmetry of Ryan Neal's podcast. And then Bjorn had his own bonsai podcast for a while. I forgot the name of it. I think it might have been the Bonsai Podcast. And then there's also a little bit of Bonsai Empire podcast stuff that came out. There was also Bonsai in Conversation. That was a really awesome show. I don't know if it's still running. There's also Black Pondo Bonsai Podcast. There's also another one on here called Bonsai Stuff. And I mean, there's just a lot of really good content, a lot of great shows to go check out that are aimed straight at bonsai. And but when I say there's far in between, is because when it comes to bonsai podcasts, I just mentioned like 10, almost 10 or so. And then for everything else, like if there was a gardening, like, you know, KS gardening podcast, which is something my wife Caitlin's really good at, and not just, you know, she likes to kind of just put all the her seeds and vegetables in one spot and just let them rip and see what happens in the garden bed. I think it's actually kind of awesome. But you can look up KS gardening podcast, or, you know, generic, you know, just going in and DIY horticulture bonsai podcast, not bonsai, horticulture gardening podcast. There's thousands of these podcasts. There's people who have done several attempts at different versions and styles. And then you get into this world of other podcasts where, like, movie reviews, video game reviews. For you guys who know that I'm a super nerd, I get into Magic the Gathering podcasts. I get into anime podcasts. I get into, you know, there was a couple of music podcasts I was listening to for a while there. And there's just so much out there. And so to hear that people have honed in on this and listened to all of our episodes, it's really cool. And so back in the day, it was called Bonsai Southeast. And I thought the name was so... I thought it was brilliant. I thought I was the smartest guy around when it came to the branding and stuff. I even got a really awesome logo that I still love. I want to bring it back and put it on a shirt. Might do that for a future printing of a shirt. That would be really cool, actually. And so Bonsai Southeast, it had the state of Louisiana, like the boot in the Gulf State area, as the bottom of a bonsai pot. And then the top of it pops out and has a bald cypress tree bonsai. You guys can go, it's a flat top style. You guys can go back if you're on Spotify or whatever you're listening on. You can scroll down all the way to the bottom to like episodes 1 through 12. And those have the thumbnail art for our original show. And so I was running that show for a while and I was really guessing at what I needed to do. If you listen to the audio and the way that those episodes were presented, they're rough and they have some really awkward timing and placement. And, but I have to give kudos to my friend Mark Coulon. He was my original show host back whenever we started this, and he did his best on it. He knows audio engineering very well, but we were changing up the pattern and the rhythm and the format of the show like almost every episode. So we had different intro songs and different layouts of how we'd open up the episodes. It was funny, you know. It was just how much change there was. And then something happened where the workload at the nursery got really over my head, and then I failed to get content put together for the show. And I had always dreamt of doing a podcast show weekly, bi-weekly, monthly, something. I just wanted consistent content going out to the masses about what I'm passionate about with bonsai, of course. And so I, you know, went through all the stuff with building the nursery up. Of course, this was most important, was keeping my business afloat and building this up and making this my career. And then when things started leveling out again, I decided, okay, let me give the podcast another crack. Let me crack at the podcast again, or however the term or the expression is. If you guys have been listening long enough, you know how I stumble with like turn of phrase and stuff. But this just came out of nowhere, and I was at a family get together and I met Matt O'Donnell. He had just married my stepsister, Amanda, and we were at a family get together just chatting, and I got to meet him and got to talk to him and found out he was a really sweet guy, really awesome dude. Of course, Matt, thank you. Go ahead and say it ahead of time. We say it at the beginning of all the episodes, but at the time I just was started up a conversation. I was like, hey man, I used to have this podcast show, and it was a thing that I tried to do for a while, and it just kind of failed on me and it flopped. And I was kind of like, you know, I really wish I could find a way to keep consistent and do that again and give it another good shot and another good go. And Matt was like, I can do that for you. And I was like, what do you mean? What can you do? And he's like, oh, I do audio stuff. Like, just throw me the files and I'll put something together for you, man. And we'll see what we can do with it. And that at that time, that was a godsend. I was like, oh, that's so awesome. Now I can actually make the dream happen again. And so I started sending Matt files and information to kind of catch up all the stuff that we had been doing on the show. And he's like, oh, this is He's like, this sounds rough. He's like, I want to do this fresh. So let's talk about how to make the show feel revitalized. Like, do you have anybody in mind for making the show something new? And I, of course, had to sit down and think about it for a while. And I knew that I had Mike. Mike was actually featured on a really early episode. And I was like, oh, I got my buddy Mike. Talk to him. See if he's interested in being a consistent show host. And when I texted Mike and I told him what the deal was and what we were thinking about putting together here, Mike was all about it. He was like, cool, let's do it. And so is with as busy as Mike is, he still commits as many episodes as he can. And I'm forever thankful for that. And as many conversations, we had some insightful, deep conversations with Mike. He delivers on every episode. So yeah, we picked up Mike. And then I had just been back over, I'd done some long distance mentorship with Michael Hagedorn, talking to him, and went over and worked with him. And then, of course, I met Carmen. She was, or still is, at the time of this recording, still his apprentice. She's ending her apprenticeship really soon here. But I went over there, and I had learned that whenever I went to work with Michael, I had to basically get along with his apprentice. And she lived at the apprentice house with her husband and her son. Her husband Lou and her son Gus, and that I had to talk with her. And then Michael was like, if you clear it with her, then you can stay at the house and you can work on the trees with her and do what you need to. So of course I hit her up and I was like, hey, and introduced myself. And little did I know that me and Carmen would become good friends. And we talked about Bonsai a lot, found out that we shared a lot of interests in the way that we look at Bonsai and the way that she's starting her career in Bonsai as well. And I was like, you're a good candidate for a Bonsai show, for my podcast. Cause me, you and Mike are all coming up at the same time. And it's like this kind of like this generation kind of thing is what I was seeing it. I was like, we're kind of like that middle generation. We're all in our 30s and we're all kind of doing things fresh. You know, we're going into this and giving it our best. And we all have Bonsai and we're doing it in different ways. You know, whereas Mike worked with Eric Weigert for a long time and started his career. And now he travels and teaches and he's headlining shows, which is amazing. And Carmen is already worked at the Mathai Gardens over in Ann Arbor. And so she's already got Bonsai experience, but with Michael's teaching, she has a real edge in Bonsai now. It's like, this is really cool. And so with what I'm doing here, I'm already working and running a Bonsai nursery, and the networking capabilities of this show just sparked a light bulb came on in my head. I was like, let's get you on so that we have someone in the Pacific Northwest or Midwest, where is she going to be at, and then in Florida. So we're covering like this map. It's a good web. We're created this web. And she was like, okay, we'll see how it goes. Because at first she was a little hesitant. She was part, or still is part, of the Bonsai Wire crew, but she was a little hesitant because she didn't know how that was going to be a conflict of interest and stuff. And so after we recorded some episodes with Carmen, me and Mike and Carmen got together. I was like, the chemistry was so good. I was like, you have to stay on the show. And so that's where we started doing Bonsai Southeast. And we all were discussing. We're like, okay, me and Mike are in the Southeast, but Carmen's not. So that doesn't make any sense. That's kind of weird. Making it sound too exclusive. We want it to be a broader audience, beginner style podcast, and not like you can only talk about bald cypresses and Southeast species so much until it's kind of like, let's talk about something else. So I decided to broaden the horizon and the scope of the show to include everyone and anyone. And so we were bouncing around with some ideas, and I don't know who said it first, but someone said it's the little things. And then someone else was like, huh, that's kind of cute because we're into little things because we're Bonsai people. And I was like, well, little things for Bonsai people, just to like hone it in, to say like, it's the little things that are special, that's special about what we do that makes us interested, that keeps us coming back. But then also it literally is about little things that we are interested in. We're minimalizing nature into a little thing that we can carry. And that's what we're doing here. And then it kind of makes us, it brings it to a simple building block, whereas the beginner concept of a show like this is formatted, where I would like it to be, you know, I don't want it to sound too inflate it. I want it to sound simple. So someone who is interested in bonsai's first time listening, they can get into it. So I thought it was a pretty good idea. And it shorthands to Little Things, which is it's actually a cool nickname for the show. And then we call ourselves the Little Things Crew. So it just fits so well. So yeah, we went with that, reformat it, replaced my old logo. But, you know, the new logo is cool, but I really like my old logo. But it's okay. I get over it. And yeah, to catch up to current, this is episode 79. I'll be producing episode 80 here in a little while shortly. And it's just been a phenomenal experience doing this show and talking with all these awesome other guests that we've been able to dial in and get to talk on our show with us about what we're passionate about, and also to share their information. And then also to kind of just casting the web wider and wider, meeting more people. And then as I go to these bonsai conventions, such as Bonsai Central, which I alluded to earlier, I'll go into that in just a second here. It's built up a lot of potential for, you know, when I go to these shows and people come up to me and they say, I listen to your show, I recognize your voice. That's amazing, you know? And so I never thought that the show would get to that point, but it's just such a cool thing to see, like, my brainchild of this show become something reputable that people listen to and people trust. And I will be forever grateful. I mean, if the show ended this week or this year, I will always be thankful, but I hope that Little Things runs for as long as I possibly can run it, you know? And so it just gives everybody a good roadmap to, I hope it's kind of like a autobiographical log to a young group of bonsai artists doing their things in the United States, or it might just be a conglomeration or a mess of like how-to guides and general discussions of bonsai. But it's overall, it has become exactly what I intended it to be. And I love it for what it is, and I love every part of this show. And I wanted to state too, something me and Matt had talked about how I wanted to bring to light the intentions of this show. And so I know we run a Patreon, and if you're a patron of the show, thank you for supporting. But the intention of the show was never to make money. It's always been that the patronage was to give somebody who wants to support the show, obviously, to help us continue to run it, because I pay fees on my streaming subscriptions, on my recording subscription. I have to pay Matt. I have to make sure that I take care of Mike and Carmen in different regards, as far as, you know, if we're going to record or if we're going to meet up somewhere. I have to also coordinate, you know, my time and stuff. So I put time into this, and I just want it to have a nice break even. That's all I want. Just like anything that like a bonsai club or a bonsai society is what their aim is. And so it's kind of like a bonsai club that you can just get to be part of. And then, so of course, the Discord is formed where anyone can go in there and hang out and just talk about bonsai all day and just literally just shoot the shit. Pardon my French. I know I've been swearing a lot more recently on recent episodes of trying to keep a general audience for this show. But I mean, be honest, a lot of older people get into bonsai, and I don't mean old. I mean, people like early millennials, my age, late 20s, 30s, going up higher, get into the show. So it's okay. But yeah, the patron was never meant to be something where we would amp up and then do stuff. In the beginning, when this started getting really exciting, we wanted to do video footage. And you can hear me talk about that earlier in the episodes. And I'm just bringing it up because the show is what it needs to be. I'm not trying to amp this up to where there's an empire built around that show. It is just what it is. It's informational, educational bonsai podcast, simple, to the point. So, but yeah, for everyone's patronage out there, again, thank you. And I will continue to do my best to provide, you know, the best quality information about bonsai and stuff that I can, you know, be the best podcaster I can bear to be. Kind of a reference to an MC Frontal Lot lyric, if anyone out there listens to Nerdcore. But yeah, I'm I feel like as far as the future of the show goes and the future of the other little things, Mike and Carmen, I do think that the future is looking really great for doing more things. So, like as reference to, say bonsai, which is, c'est bon, like the French c'est bon, that's good, but say bonsai, try to do this little spin on it. We did say bonsai 2024 a couple of months ago, and we're going to do it again next year. And say bon 2025 will feature the first Little Things for Bonsai People live podcast show. And so it's a little ways away, but a lot of planning goes into that, but that will feature the first live recording, and that will be really cool. And that's the kind of like, that's the kind of future amping up things that the show will get to. We'll do a recording of us talking there, and then we're going to do some live demos that will be exclusive to here. We'll hopefully get a good recording of it, so we can release it on YouTube or something. But, you know, hopefully our future will also entail, because you could probably hear Mike and Carmen talk about it every once in a while. We're just kind of just ranting about things. They're like, oh, wouldn't it be awesome for a Little Things tour? And I'm like, let's see where we get, guys. But as long as we stay friends, and as long as we stay good with our bonsai careers, there is opportunities for us to network in that way. So I really do look forward to those things. And as the podcast being somewhat of a catalyst to kind of venture into other things like that. So, and I know I've talked to the guys with Bonsai Central, and there's a possibility for us to do things with that. That would be really awesome. And I mean, there's also possibilities. I do a lot of stuff with the Texas clubs over here. Why not? You know, what if Mike and Carmen end up in the same spot and I go do that too? You know, so there's a lot of potential for little things to become basically just little things, just to continue to be what it is. And so that's the hopes and the dreams of it. And I just wanted to make my intentions clear, state to you guys who I am, so that there's no mystery. I'm not somebody who claims to know what bonsai is, and I'm not claiming to be somebody who's, you know, I'm not like a secret bonsai artist or anything. Like, I'm out here in the open. That's why I'm doing this. I want people to hear me. So that's all it is to it. I know it might be a little bit of an awkward thing to say, but it's in my nature to just kind of overstate things like that sometimes. But anyway, so going back to Bonsai Central, I know we had them sponsor our show for a while. Those who had listened to our show probably got bludgeoned with the ad read. I don't know how many of you guys skipped it, but that's okay. We still love you if you skipped it. But if you guys went to the show, to Bonsai Central, and you went there because you heard it on our show, kudos. Awesome. Bonsai Central was an amazing experience. And like I said, with the recordings coming up here at the end of this episode, we'll give you some insight of some of the conversations that we had. I didn't get to record as much as I wanted to because I was quite frazzled from my experience that I talked about in the previous episode where the van broke down. But overall, Bonsai Central was an amazing representation of what we're capable of doing with American bonsai right now, as far as the high quality bonsai stuff that is very, very similar to what you would see at the national show or the Pacific Bonsai Expo. And so it's like this, it's kind of like how I was describing earlier. It's like this sweet spot between everything. It's really cool to be part of those things and to be able to travel and teach bonsai and then display my bonsai in this manner. And if you guys go look at my Facebook page, you can see the displays that I did. I did a bald cypress. It's a flat top style. It was planted on a stone, or still is. I nicknamed it Ghoul because it's got a big giant deadwood mark in the front of it. I displayed that for the very first time in a show like this. So that was really interesting. And then I had my formal upright bald cypress, which is just a basic style of a basic representation of this, the formal upright, you know, straight trunk, straight branches coming down, nice full crown, big tree presence. And then I had with that tree my Yopon holly that was actually gifted to me by my good friend Dawn Ketting. She grew it from a Home Depot tree. It's a very precious tree to me, alongside some pitcher plants that I actually was also gifted from somebody who dug it out of a ditch that was not even a mile from the nursery here, because those pitcher plants grow native here. And then I had my water elm on display. And my Water Elm was displayed alongside the Kusumono that won Best Kusumono in Show at the BCI show in Texas the week before. It's very unique because brought the Kusumono there, displayed it alongside another tree, and it won the award. And then I brought it up to Bonsai Central and displayed it alongside the Water Elm, which it has been displayed alongside that Water Elm and two other shows as well. It was displayed at the ABS show in Denver, Colorado in 2023, as well as the national show in 2023 as well, and Rochester, New York. And then I wanted to keep the pairing and bring it again. And I showed my favorite scroll. It has a little shrimp on it to represent the seafood culture in Louisiana. But now Tokutake went up to it and looked at it now, and now told me, amazing bonsai potter, that I had a conversation. I wish I had recorded that conversation, but I was in the moment. He was telling me that if you have a shrimp on your background scroll, it's a flying shrimp. It should represent a literal background of your bonsai. So anything in the air suspended is indicated as it's in the air, it's flying. So he was like, that's a flying shrimp display. And I was like, oh, well, it is what it is. So that was really funny. And then I had two Guy Guidry trees that Guy has let me continue the work on and show for him and represent him as well as myself, refining these trees and bringing them to the next state. And one was a Celtis Lavigata, which is the southern hackberry, and that was collected by him years ago, easily over 20 years of training. Beautiful trunk, beautiful movement. And then his Podocarpus Mycophyllus, which is a Buddhist pine, common name around here, that was collected in New Orleans area by a friend of his, and then he developed into an amazing, just giant bonsai. So that those trees were really interesting to move and to handle. And this was the most trees that I put on at a display at one time. Normally I would display one tree, maybe two. Bonsai club shows like Baton Rouge, New Orleans, or New Iberia, I've brought like two trees at the most. But this was my biggest, this was a pretty ambitious display. So it was a lot of fun. So doing stuff like teaching a workshop and displaying trees and also setting up a vendor table has always been a very, you know, daunting kind of thing to do all those things at the same time. But that's kind of like the crash course. That's how I learn. That's how I teach other people. And I honestly wouldn't do it any other way. And as long as I'm still young right now and I have the opportunities, I will try to keep doing those things. So, but yeah, Bonsai Central was a very enlightening experience to see how Jesse and Nathan are, how they both handled the show and how they went about it and how they did, just kind of break it down. They did their first demo was where they had Maria Heidick. I know I pronounced her name wrong, so that's just me. In the previous episodes, Maria, Tyler Sherrod, Bjorn Bjornholm, Andrew Robson, and Mario Stimberger all did a demo all at the same time, did simultaneous demos. This is typical. And then they auctioned off all the trees. And then for the second night where they were auctioning off the trees to kind of lighten the mood, they took all those same artists, instead of having them work on their own trees, they took a handful of donated bonsai trees and had them go and work on one tree for 10 minutes, and then everyone rotated to the next tree. So they would go clockwise, and they would all switch positions to the next tree and work on the next tree. It was pretty funny, pretty interesting. All the trees came out really cool looking, though. They're, obviously, all the artists were very talented. They were able to kind of do like that telephone game style thing where it's like the next person kind of tries to interpret what the previous person was doing, and they all kind of got together with it, and they all made it happen. All the trees were really cool at the end. So, but it's really cool to see innovative approaches to bonsai conventions and shows. And, you know, hopefully going on in the future, we'll see more of this kind of stuff instead of just your, you know, bonsai artist with your demo piece, and they're standing in the front working on the tree. It can be a little monotonous sometimes where it's just like, this is the tree, this is the artist, and he's going to work on it for 4 hours. And that's a lot. That's a lot of time. So every once in a while, a little shakeup's not bad. It's welcomed for that type of setting. And so I do also need to mention that Cho, Young Cho, Miss Cho, whatever, however I call her, Young, by her first name, but I've met her a few times now. She was there as well, and she was doing a full scale, like she did a whole wall of her own of just her own kusamono display, which is just amazing. And she brought all of her kusamono display and accent and tables and everything that she had. She brought it all from her own home and set all this stuff up. And it was her own collection of plants and kusamono. It was amazing. A lot of good material. And she did her own demo, but the only thing that would set, she was set apart from the other artists because she was the only kusamono artist. So she couldn't like bounce around to the trees during the rotating kind of like musical chairs, musical bonsai game they did. Instead, she created her own kusamono planting. She actually created like five kusamono plantings that were auctioned off by the end of the show. And they're all beautiful displays. So I'm hoping that in the future, we'll get more kusamono people, will get serious, step up and do some, you know, kusamono display workshops and demos. And maybe when we do these conventions, we can have more and more of this. Because I did get to meet Soon. Her name is Soon Lin. She is based out of the Houston area, and she does kusamono as well. She's been a student of Young's, and her work is also really awesome. Let me see if I can find her Instagram really quick so you guys can go give her a follow and see what more amazing kusamono should look like. Yep. If you go to kusamono_soon, give her a follow. Go see her beautiful work. Very much in line with what Young Cho is doing as well. And you can see the creativeness and the playfulness in her designs. And we need more kusamono. Just going to put that out there. The Purple Pot Society also supports a kusamono sector of what they do. So guys aren't familiar with Purple Pot Society. That is Carmen and her friend Sam got together and formed the Purple Pot Society for women in bonsai and to support women. And they have a kusamono award that they presented at ABS in the past, and they will be doing educational programs. So anyway, without further ado, since I've been ranting, I thought it would be difficult to do an episode by myself, but have found that this is actually, so it's fine. As long as you guys don't mind it, I will do more bonsai educational pieces and stuff. I'll write up, you know, I'll try my best to write up scripts and then give you guys some chunks of information if I can't seem to get Carmen and Mike at the same time. This was something I wanted to do by myself to finally put myself out there as just who, you know, this is me. This is what I'm doing. This is what the show is. And so you guys can get to know me. But yeah, without further ado, we'll go. Matt's going to cut us over to the snippets of the audio clips from Bonsai Central. But thank you guys for listening. And then I will talk to you guys a little bit at the end.
This podcast is supported by Bonsai Bar, the beginner bonsai workshop popping up in breweries all across the Northeast. Bonsai Bar is 2 hours of tiny tree goodness disguised as a night out with friends. Come grab drinks, create a new tree, and watch as your friends and family get the bug for bonsai. Bonsai Bar is always looking for teachers and assistants, and you listen to this podcast, so you're probably already qualified. Bring your knowledge out to the bar. Apply today. Find event tickets, contact info, and more at bonsaibar.com.
Hey everyone, this is John Eads, founder of Left Coast Bonsai and proud supporter of the Little Things for Bonsai People podcast. I'm breaking into your feed today to let you know about a few exciting things we're doing here at Left Coast Bonsai. We're a small, family-owned bonsai nursery that's focused on producing high-quality bonsai plant material, as well as sourcing hard-to-find supplies for growing in your own yard. For many of us, winter is a time to pause and reflect on the year ahead. Now's a good time to decide what seedlings and supplies you need for the upcoming season. We have a large selection of seedlings that will begin shipping out mid-February for our spring season. You can also order baskets, felt bags, or aluminum wire. In addition to the seedlings and supplies, I also teach classes and study groups on a broad range of subjects, including growing trees from scratch. I hope to hear from you soon and would love to talk about how we can support your bonsai growing journey. You can find us online at leftcoastbonsai.com, on Instagram at leftcoastbonsai, or send me an email at talk@leftcoastbonsai.com. Cheers.
So first of all,
yeah.
for those who don't know who you are,
all right,
tell us.
So my name is Tyler Sherrod. I'm from Hickory, North Carolina.
Yeah.
I am a professional bonsai artist. Studied in Japan for 5.5, almost 6 years under Shinji Suzuki in Nagano, outside of Nagano, Japan.
Okay.
Studied a little bit with Boone out in California. He's the one that helped me get over to Japan.
Yeah, of course.
Been back now since, 2016, I believe.
Cool.
And now, you know, just kind of doing the whole early bonsai professional in America, do the tours, stay on the road, road, build up my name, build up my work. And
that's treating you well.
It's getting rough.
it's work. Yeah.
It's to the point now. It's like, all right, I got to slow down a little bit.
Yeah. Cause you have your schedule builds up. Yep. Yeah.
So a little bit, you gotta, you know, as you start trying to build a garden at home, I'm to that point where it's like, now you gotta be at home a little bit more.
And the garden needs
to be. Come hang out with me at home.
Yeah. Y'all need to start going and learning
right,
that
exactly.
At your garden
okay,
now.
Yeah. Yeah. So Dogwood Studios is my business. That's my name. And
cool.
So that's kind of where.
And do you offer seasonals or anything
I'm
like
right
that?
I'm this close to doing that.
Okay.
Hopefully the summer will be the first kind of inaugural one, and from there you know, have seasonals throughout the
awesome.
year. And
yep.
Start out probably with a couple here and there, and then have a much more of them throughout the year as time goes on.
Cool.
Yeah, just getting there.
Yeah, y'all go, is there a website they can go check out?
Yeah, so Dogwood Studios NC for North Carolina.
Yep.
Instagram, Facebook, Dogwood Studios.
That's if y'all are interested, go check that out.
Yep.
But let's talk about this piece real quick. Tell us about what we're looking at here.
So this is a Femina juniper forest. This is one of my client's trees in Atlanta. In probably about 4 or 5 years ago, this was in the club show in Atlanta. And we both saw this. An older gentleman had it. It was much more younger looking, wasn't as filled out as this. And he showed it, and that was kind of the last time he was ready to be done with it. So my client said, all right, I'm ready to take over this tree. He got the opportunity to buy it.
Mm.
And since then, we've been really working on it and kind of taking it over, trying to make it his tree, which has entailed, you know, really, you know, rounding out these pads, getting more mature pads. Really trying to, you know, just make it look like a mature tree from where it originally was. So we've kind of gotten it there to that point. It's taken a couple of years. It was originally in a pot. We put it on the slab to give it a little bit more natural feel. Gave it a little bit of a tilt over to the left to give it a little bit more movement, because originally it was more just straight up and down. But we wanted to really try to at least get some directionality to it.
Yeah. That was going to be one of my questions. Was it in a container? Because it does feel like one of those forests that would have started its life.
Absolutely. That's what it was.
Container.
So I'm pretty sure it was cuttings that he started out with. Again, older gentleman. He probably, you know, had it for 20, 30 years, I would guess. You know, starting it from little cuttings to grow to this. So, you know, it has a long history. I think, you know, there's a certain point in some cases where you have these older trees. You get them out of those pots and putting on a slab once they get mature. Kind of changes the feeling overall, and I think this is a good example of how, you know, you put it on that slab and now you've got something a little bit more interesting.
Cool.
And then from there, you can actually, as it gets more refined, more filled out, you can kind of step back, put it back in a pot and have a little bit more formal feel. So it's a fun thing going from a slab to a pot. You know, that's kind of the change they can take sometimes.
Yeah, it's a piece that definitely has a lot of play in it, like you're saying.
Yeah. And still, you know, the goal now is, you know, we've really gotten these canopies, all these pads are really starting to become full. Still got a little work. Now, this isn't quite there as far as the fullness. So it's really working on that. One of the things we've been discussing, too, this right side starting to get pretty full compared to the rest of it. It's also getting a little straight here.
Mm-hmm.
So we've been discussing what branches can we start removing to kind of get a little bit more of a lighter area feeling that kind of has over there.
Cool. Yeah.
It's an evolution. It's fun to kind of see these trees, you know, go from, you know, just a single pad or a single branch to, you know, a couple branches, a pad, then mature pads. That's bonsai for you.
Yeah. I mean, it looks great for this show, though.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah.
I agree.
It looks, and it'll get there.
It's fun. I encourage people as you start working your trees, as they start becoming mature, show them off, you know, get them in a show and, you know, club shows or whatever. That way you can put it in a show and then say, you know, 3-4 years later, bring it back in and say, now look what it's done. It's getting better.
And as you talk with other bonsai people and they'll tell you their takes on it.
That's right.
What can be improved.
That's right.
And that's the only way to do it is to show those trees.
Exactly.
But yeah, really appreciate you talking about this tree with me, man.
Yeah, nice little
chatting with you.
Yeah, thank you very much.
Yeah, dude.
So talk to me about, how did you get connected? Were you living at the time up in Asheville when you got connected with Vaughn?
No, I was living in New Orleans.
Okay.
Down there, stationed there. I was in the Navy, stationed at the Hebert Reserve Center.
Okay.
For headquarters.
Yes.
And I've just had, I've been doing bonsai since 73.
Okay.
And went to the local club.
Right.
Got with Alan and found out, you know, as far as the trip, you know, he was scheduling a trip. And I said, hey, I want to go.
Yeah.
I had an English friend staying with Donna at the time. I went up there. So went up there and had three to 4 days of digging at Catahoula,
right.
Water Elm, and we dug a couple of bald cypress.
What time of the year was that, Mr. Darrell?
July.
Because they collect, right. You July. Remember it because I'm sure.
Because I almost got heat stroke that time.
Yeah.
Had to go get some Gatorade and everything else.
That's right.
To do on that. But
Around what year was that, Mr. Darrell?
87.
Wow.
I was stationed there between 85 and 88.
Right.
Caught four Mardi Gras because of the station.
Yeah.
Anyway, it was really great.
Did y'all continue to develop those trees that y'all collected?
No, unfortunately, they passed on. And moving up to Memphis, my sprinkler system that I had devised and running back and forth from Memphis to New Orleans. Mm-hmm. Out of New Orleans, I got stationed at Memphis.
Right.
The sprinklers either got turned off or something, and they collapsed.
Yeah.
And at that time, I was not keeping them in water. So things just didn't work out. And since then, most of these were collected in Memphis, except the one that was inherited on that.
So when you talk about submersion, I'm not catching the idea that you're doing it so you can be lazy. So you, in the event you forget, obviously that's a perk.
Yeah.
But do you feel that's the $1 million question that everybody asks about cypress? What's been your take on submersion and the benefits?
It keeps it healthier.
Right.
I'm getting knees. And the fact, I mean, it's 90% of it, that's its natural environment.
Right.
So I want to put it back there, and they seem to flourish. And as I told you, I went from, one or two inch saplings to by keeping them in a 1 gallon in water clustered together.
Right.
And they tripled and quadrupled their trunk size in just a few years.
Mr. Darrell, what's your manner of fertilization? Is it a lot of fish emulsion, or is it some?
No, I'm a Miracle-Gro guy.
Yeah.
In the spring, like right now, I'll use the general purpose, which is a little bit higher nitrogen than I really want. And about every 3 weeks till 1st of June, I'll use that spray application, not on the foliage. No, not on foliage.
Okay.
I try and keep it just on the pot.
Okay.
I've not really gotten good luck with that because I've burned a couple.
Really?
You know, just a little bit. And that may be because it was the very first flush out of the container.
I got you.
So it could have been too strong on that. After that, I go to the Miracle-Gro tomato, which is either 10-10-10 or 18-18. I forget which that is right now, but it's a more generic. And I'm not doing this on pines, black pines or white pines, except in the spring. Later on, August through September, I start using fish emulsion on those.
Mm.
But unfortunately, it draws squirrels, and I got a bad squirrel problem.
Yeah. What's your other hobbies? Do you have anything else you like to do, Mr. Darrell?
I'm a heavy military collector.
Okay.
I'm heavy into Japanese. I've got 25 Japanese uniforms, and
really?
Of that, 15 of them are full dress.
Yeah.
I can show you pictures of those in a minute or so. That's a hat, plume, sword, everything like that.
What do you feel sparked that interest for you?
I like to say I was indoctrinated when I was a little kid. I had an aunt that was a missionary pre-war and post-war Japan.
Okay.
After she retired, she was living at my grandfather's place, and we were four, five, six, something like that.
Right.
And when she was babysitting, we would have green tea and sticky rice.
Come on.
If we were going to take a nap, she read a Japanese fable on that. Now, you know, many years later, I'm in the Navy. I'm stationed over in Japan on the Midway, living in Yokohama. The ship's in Yokosuka. We were flying out of Atsugi.
Around what year is this?
This is 79 to 82.
Okay.
On that. First year, didn't get a lot of country to see, but the wife, when we were there, developed what was going on. Mm-hmm. And we got to see a little bit, went over to Nara and Kyoto, hit a lot of the shrines there. I just love the country.
Right.
I love their old architecture. I like seeing the old samurai movies and actually look at the buildings and everything with the faded cedar and all that stuff.
Right.
And I'm trying to do some of that flame stuff.
There's a guy over here wanting to do that with some stands that he's looking at.
It works really nice from what I can see. I'm just trying to do that. But anyway, and we did one thing. It was called gomi hunting.
Okay.
The Japanese, like their TVs and other stuff, don't throw that into the trash. They put it in one place, and once a month, it's all picked up. Well, the Americans and other foreigners can go through that stuff. And what was interesting to find were bulk tea boxes, and they can be anywhere from the size of that cart down to little bitty ones, 1 pound, 2 pounds, but they were lead line, cedar, wood, and my wife, ex-wife at the time, but anyway, she took them back and found out that you can put washi paper over them and make them like an end table and stuff. So those were that. Yeah. But I picked up wind-up clocks.
Yeah.
I've got one that was dedicated in 1942 to the Yokohama Police Department. That particular little police niche from 42, but I picked up a bunch of wind-up clocks and everything. But anyway, I'm a heavy military collector. I've been collecting bayonets for a hell of a long time, and then uniforms now and other things that are going on.
Wow. Well, I know you and I just kind of struck up conversation, but
yeah.
Mr. Darrell, when I tell you, for me, it means a lot for somebody like you who've been doing this so long to even be willing to have conversation.
Oh, I love,
you know,
love to talk about that's how you find out things.
Right.
You know, you've got a different way of doing stuff.
Right.
I've got that. It's just, I admire that, you know, you guys can go out in the middle of the summer and go out and find these trunks and strip them, and then they just pop back out. I've not been that fortunate in some regards. So,
what are you looking forward to the show?
I was getting a couple of plants.
Were you here yesterday at all?
Huh?
Were you here yesterday?
No, I just came up for the day.
I got you.
Without showing or doing anything, spending 2 days is a little bit long for me. Anyway, I came up to get some plants from Dave. And I always like to see exhibits. So I take all the pictures and everything.
Right.
Went with Dave in 2017 to one of his trips. So we saw the 8th World Bonsai Convention over there. And I took buku pictures. Unfortunately, somebody stole my tablet 6 months later. And I lost all those pictures.
You hold this one close.
Yeah. Well, I was at a gun show, and I laid my satchel in the front seat and didn't lock the car. Went back in for another load to come back out, and it was gone. So
yeah. Well, real quick, I'm sure you saw the two cypress that.
No, I haven't been in there yet, but it will.
Yeah. So come back in.
Okay.
After you see him, because he has definitely two different iterations, two different takes on on some age and obviously both cypress trees.
Well, as you were saying, you know, I heard enough from Vaughn about the flat tops, and then driving out to through Metairie or Kenner, I can remember seeing those. Seeing some of those flat tops, and as the some of the pictures you've seen of what I've had, they're not totally flat, but they're a little bit more spread out.
Right.
And around Memphis, I can find a couple of trees that are old enough to have developed that way, but many of them are still too young. They're still on the upright.
Right.
But I wanted to comment that very first picture you showed me, that big cypress.
Yes.
I like the way the branches were at that.
Did you?
Yeah. I like to see branches on that. And the only thing I would do is probably lower them down just a little bit.
Right.
Where are you going with it? Looks great too.
Yeah. Well, and that's the thing. Your take, my take, to be open and willing to say, I can see what you're saying. I see what you're trying to do there.
Yeah.
You know.
Well, in our club, way back when, there was about four or five of us that got together every now and then and said, we'd go to this each other's place and say, okay, set out three or four of them. I've got problems with this. I don't see anything. Tell me what you think.
I see it every day. Yeah.
Yeah. And so they say, okay, I'd like to do this, isn't it? Yeah, that looks pretty good. And then somebody else says something. Oh, that's better. You know, so everybody can see something different.
I love that. I desire for that. I want somebody to critique.
Yeah.
Ask me what I'm thinking.
Well, it's not a critique. It's more of a suggestion.
That's right.
You know, this is the way I like to do it. And the way the American bonsai, you know, has gone is it's your interpretation of how to do it.
That's right.
Because we're dealing with a lot of different species that are not available in Japan and they don't have anything. And, you know, and up until in the last 20 years, a lot of the information that came out of Japan was false.
Yeah.
They were keeping it to themselves on how to do it the right way.
Right. So I think it was the first Kokafu, I believe, or it might have been a Takantin. It's one of the Japanese. It was the mid-1920s. We were talking about it last night at dinner and how, compared to now, what people thought were really high-quality trees, even in Japan back then.
Yeah.
Looking at, like, there's progression trees or progression pictures of that tree. Here more recent, it's neat to see how that tree has grown, but it's also really interesting to see how our standards of what a quality tree, you know, how that shifts, how it changes.
Right.
You know, before I let you go, because I know you want to get around and see other people, do you see right now, do you notice there's more interest? Can you gauge that at all?
Interest which way?
Just could be specifically with cypress. It could be specifically here in the States with bonsai itself. I mean, this is a new show. You see on the West Coast, the Pacific Expo.
It's a little stuff.
I feel like there's more professionals coming back.
Yeah.
That have trained.
Yeah.
And
it's
you don't show any longer.
No.
But there are people like you who have really wonderful high quality trees. You know, the backyard grower is going to have some incredible trees too.
Yeah.
Do you see that at all? That it's shifted? That it's getting better?
Yeah. It has. And I think it's been since 92. Memphis put on the first BCI convention after it had been out overseas for 3 years. We had Kimura and other things. But things have gone exponentially. Mm. The Karate Kid didn't hurt anything either.
Right. The internet didn't hurt either, did it?
Yeah, but it was all kind of Hollywood. But
that's right.
Anyway, it was great.
These aren't bonsai trees, by the way. These are bonsai. These aren't bonsai trees, right?
Well, it's a tree in a pot.
That's right. That's right. Well, Mr. Darrell, I appreciate you.
Yeah, me too.
I really enjoyed talking with
you. Appreciate it.
Thank you, sir. I look forward to staying in touch, hopefully.
Yeah.
Check it out. I'm here with Joel Jenkins.
Yeah.
wonderful guy, incredible, not only incredible guy, but how would you describe yourself? I wouldn't say learner, because we talked about
student.
Yes.
Yeah, how about a student?
So he did take home the best show and display at Save Bonsai. Okay, so we are here. So he truly understands the difficulty in setting up and the challenge in setting up a show and display. So
pain and anguish.
We've talked to a few people who kind of claim this.
Yep.
Joel, if you could give us a quick rundown of what you see here, what you think stands out to Joel's eye.
So number one that catches me is the black pine at top. It's a it's an incredible pine. It has all the right features and none of the incorrect features. It is almost as perfect as you can get if you were to draw it up.
So before you transition, there's one across the way.
Yeah.
What would you say are the flaws in it compared to this one?
The two things would be trunk size.
Okay.
That one's slightly larger and has better taper ratio. Okay. And then the other thing would be the branch placement. First and second are two cloves on the other one. That one has a slightly greater differential on branch placement.
And again, not a whole lot of room to play with when we talk.
Sure. Sub 8 inches. So right. I mean, you're talking literally a quarter to an eighth of an inch difference in height of branches, making it good or better.
Right. Yeah. So what else do we have here?
So you have a really good trident maple, which is your deciduous that shows that. And it's in leaf, so it's hard to tell, but it has a extremely good taper, very ramified branches. You have your white pine, which is a semi-cascade. So that is a classic. It's a conifer, but it's not the king of the black pine. So it's taking the substance of that. You have your Iliagnus or your Russian olive. That's a very good example of a small Russian olive. Those are very vigorous, so they're hard to keep where they're at. Small, you have your Hinoki, dwarf Hinoki. That's a extremely good example of a dwarf Hinoki. Then you have over here, you have your accent tree, which they kind of took a different approach of. Typically, you have an accent plant here, but instead of the accent plant, they put an accent tree, which is a incredible example of a Zelkova. It's a broom, and Zelkovas, if you know anything about Zelkovas, they have extremely large leaves, and those are all small. Mm-hmm. So a really good example. And then you have your semi-cascade, Itoigawea, Shimpaku, Juniper. So, which is just a classic staple in the in the component to the accent of the stand.
Joel, before we go, quick question.
Yeah.
What are you most excited about this weekend? Aside from the miniature show being displayed right back behind
the miniature. Yeah. I'm actually really excited to see the trees, and it looks like it's going to be a different group of trees than what you've seen at maybe Nationals or PBE. And so it's picking up from a different region. It's exciting to see a different group of trees.
Certainly.
Yeah.
Certainly. Thanks, Joel.
Yeah.
So this is an example of an amazing Korean hornbeam right here. I'm assuming that this would either be an imported tree or just a really old developed tree here in the States. Just looking in there, there's no cuts. There's no obvious scars on this tree. It has a beautiful nabari that tapers up into, I mean, just a near perfect crown here, and everything, every single branch tapers down perfectly and is refined really well.
Uniform leaf size, really well reduced.
Yep.
You've got empty space.
Yeah, nice windows into the canopy here.
Talk about the pot. Sounds
good. Yeah, the pot, I mean, this is very well suited for a tree like this. It's a little bit of an interesting choice for such a Japanese traditional style here. It reminds me a little bit more of an old antique Chinese pot. Yeah, but it's showing great age and great patina.
Was handled with certificate.
How old
do I think this tree is? That's hard to put a number on that. I mean, a trunk that big, and then with all of its wounds to be healed properly. Right. I mean, we're talking.
Not just the ramification, but about the wound and the
it's
role.
It's got to be 40, 50 years in training.
Yeah.
If not grown, I mean, there's a couple of different ways that this could have been approached to, is like
this could have been grown, farm grown, like in Japan, where yeah. this is in the ground and they achieve all this work early on in its life.
Come on.
Yeah, the Korean.
Come here. I want you to speak on it.
Is this your tree? Oh, would you like, to talk about it?
Come introduce yourself, Mr. Robert. Come talk to us.
Yeah.
Come on, Mr. Robert. So look, this is Mr. Robert. Mr. Rob, where are you out of?
New Jersey.
So look, Mr. Rob, I'm gonna clamp this.
Yeah, don't be scared.
And just speak to us in regards to
just tell us about your warm beans.
This is the first tree we stepped in. All to right. So provide a little bit of critique.
It was field grown in Korea and imported to Japan about 70 years ago.
Come on.
And then it was developed in Japan, and it was then imported to the U.S. about 20 to 30 years ago.
Yeah.
And all of the fine ramifications have all been developed in the U.S. So it's, and it's in an antique Chinese pot. And
that's something I picked up on
immediately. We were able to find a nice antique Chinese pot for it.
Do you have earlier pictures of the tree, iterations of the tree, by chance?
There are pictures of it at the Winter Silhouette Show in North Carolina.
Okay.
So
did you display it there as well?
Last December, yes.
How do you feel it, this being a spring show, how do you feel, what's the contrast?
Well, you can't appreciate the tree now.
Right. Right.
The tree in North Carolina, you can actually, it's got a lot of ramification and a lot of nice taper to all of the branching.
Right.
And great movement.
You have to pinch a lot or no, Mr. Robert?
Yes, the entire tree gets pinched every spring.
Yeah.
As it starts pushing. And this has got now probably three times the ramification it had when I got it back in about 5 years ago.
Is that right?
Yeah.
I know back in Louisiana, we had a wonderful fall in terms of our fall color. What do you feel?
This is a little bit of an anomaly. It will turn yellow, and then about a month later, it turns a bright red.
Really?
Yeah. So you're thinking, oh, that's a really nice color.
Yeah.
And then it really turns, and you're like, whoa.
Yeah, yeah.
Just depends on the weather.
Yes.
You know?
Well, it's wonderful, Mr. Robert. And I know... We appreciate you sharing it with us and appreciate the backstory.
Thank you.
Yes, sir, Mr. Robert.
Appreciate it.
Yes, sir.
Thanks.
We're nearing the end of Bonsai Central and hanging out with Jesse for a moment. We're over on the expo floor with all the beautiful trees. And how do you feel, man? How's it going?
I'm tired. The funny thing about these things is you really want to enjoy the show. But organizing it, you spend a lot of time doing all the things that pull you away from enjoying the show. So it's a little bittersweet this morning.
Mm-hmm.
I have access, so I got in here early. I'm really taking a good look at the trees. It's absolutely incredible. I can't believe this many of the best trees all came into one room. I mean, people come in here and they're just flabbergasted by it. I mean, really, the emotion is pretty nuts.
Yeah. Some of the trees, like the awards that were given to, like the best in show tree is phenomenal. And it's not very common that you see a deciduous tree will win best in show, because it's usually a conifer or a juniper or pine. But I mean, this one is of a special caliber. And I mean, that tree's old, it's got a lot of history. And so you see like other trees in the show just like that. Lots of really old, I've seen a lot of these trees in other high-end shows, you know. And so, yeah, I mean, I would definitely agree. There's some great stuff here. And then you also had something really fun last night. Y'all did the speed run for the artists. That was really interesting to watch. So how do you feel about all the other events, such as the workshops and the artist demonstrations?
The workshops, the artist demonstrations. I mean, I just heard Mauro saying he was super pleased. He thought it was super fun just how we had all that arranged and organized. There was just always something happening.
Yeah,
the artists all got to really engage with each other too. So having multiple professionals here like that, it's great for them to see each other and catch up, but watching their rapport on stage and just having fun with the audience, I think was fantastic. And it just made us, it brought them down to our level. And I mean, really everybody got to.
I can agree. Yeah. It gave us a slightly different perspective. Like you said, everyone was more lively, like as far as laughing, lots of smiles, more camaraderie. Like that barrier was broken during some of those events, which I think was really cool.
Certainly. Yeah. I felt in the past, coming to some of these events, the artists are always so busy.
Yep.
That I didn't really even have access, or like I'm just in their way to just stop and say, hey, thank you, or, or just even have a conversation at all with them. And so this felt a whole lot more personal. And that was something we were aiming for. We wanted these demos and everything to just kind of be down in the crowd, be with people. And I think we were pretty successful with that.
Cool.
Mm-hmm. Cool.
So what's the future for Bonsai Central? How are you feeling?
I think I'm going to take a long rest after this. We have a lot of things to think about. Certainly running list of things we could improve.
Mm-hmm.
I think, really it's the trick is, how do we draw this many incredible trees back here again?
Yeah.
That would be my goal, to get as many high-end exhibition trees as we can once again.
Yeah. Well, like I said before, thank you so much for having us here. I know you guys have been supporting the podcast as well. Thank you guys so much for, being a component of that. And it's been an honor, like getting this show out into the world and talking about it very often. And we can't wait to see what the future can hold for more awesome bonsai exhibitions like this.
Yeah, well, you're welcome. We love the podcast. It's something I listen to all the time now. Every time I'm working on a tree, it's like, okay, is there something new out? Yeah. And the really cool thing is getting to meet you in person. And I wanted to say that I know I kind of got into it last night in the banquet, but the community, it's just really cool how this national community has come together. West Coast, East Coast, everybody's here. Everybody's excited to meet each other and see each other. And that's how I felt with the national. I remember in 21, I think somebody from California was on Facebook with Kimura Nursery. And they were driving through and I was like, hey, you'll probably be in St. Louis tomorrow. If you need to stop and water your trees, why don't you stop? And it was just kind of cool how that worked. And a lot of the people coming up here worked with each other to get their trees up here. So it was just cool.
Yep. Yeah. The bonsai community in North America is definitely getting more and more. We're building bridges to each and every little area. So West Coast and East Coast don't feel so far away now. And this is a good little spot to just join things together really nicely. So I would say excellent job. I've been really impressed as well as far as the quality, like you said. I'm just happy to be here, and so we'll see what the last day holds for us. It should be a nice, last day of the convention's kind of like, all right, we're winding down, everybody's ready to go, but at the same time we're going to be sad to see all these beautiful
things. It's kind of heartbreaking a little bit. I wish we could keep it set up forever.
Jesse, thank you so much for talking to me real quick.
Sure. Appreciate it.
Yeah. Thank you guys for listening to the content that we were able to collect from Bonsai Central. And I'm going to go ahead and tell you guys about our patron list real quick and spout off our names as I promised before. And so starting off our list, we have Vicky Auth, Boyd Snellgrove, Ricky Ruins, Joshua Bentley, Snappy Chappers, Joel Jenkins, Justin Knight, Backyard Bonsai Australia, Ben Crayon, Greenwich Gardens, Taylor Peacock, Chase Pertweet, Austin Atkins, Karen Codswell, Ryan Gardano, Loris Torres, Luis Torres, AC Castle, Bonsai Marine, J.A.S. Potts, Chris Fossoon, Timothy Arsenal, Randy Bennett, Victrina Ridgeway, Laurence Bonsai Yard, Nate Murray, Nancy Hoffman, Joshua Roth Tools, James Stewart Woodworking, Rouse Rat, David N., Barry's Bonsai, Sean Seaman, Gilbert Jerez, David J. Baccaccini, Shell or Chantel Wynn, David Smith, and Hist Warrior, Byron Myrick Pottery, Dale, Erwaldo
Eduardo Fernandez, Joseph Dominque, and Wesley Thompson. And of course, our specimen best buds, Anra Yuen, Bonsai Garden, Christina Corforia, and Bill's Bayou, Bill Butler, anchor of the show, of the patronage. Thank you, Bill, for holding it down. If you weren't here, we wouldn't be able to say this every time. But anyway, we also have go to underhillbonsai.com, read a few articles, go to underhillbonsaistore.com, look at a few things we have. We offer we're listing a lot of our artisan, like American bonsai pottery that we're getting, as well as Joshua Roth tools. You can go over there and purchase Joshua Roth tools from our web, directly from our website. We do ship all over America. We're going to work on international stuff. I don't know how soon that will be. That's honestly a pretty challenging thing to get, but maybe in the future. You can go over to Kitsune Bonsai. That's going to be the Kitsune, like the fox, the Japanese lore fox, to go check out Mike Lane's offerings. He's in South Florida, and he does classes and he does traveling to teach people bonsai and share his wealth of knowledge. He will be at the Bonsai on the Bay in Texas. It's going to be in, I believe that's going to be, let me get the exact, they just announced it, but there's not really information. It's going to be Corpus Christi, Texas. I know right now, as of right now, it's going to be Mike and Jennifer Price. There's going to be another bonsai artist. I can't remember who it was, but keep an eye out for that. If you're in the Texas area or you live near that area and you want to drive in to see them, that would be excellent. It's going to be a great show, just like the BCI show I just came from, where I got to hang out with Mike and we did stuff there. I'll be vendoring there as well. And then also Mike and Carmen, like I mentioned before, will be at Say Bonsai 2025. And hopefully Matt will be here too to help us record it, so you can meet Matt O'Donnell as well. And then for Carmen, you can go over to Becoming Bonsai and you can go check out her stuff on Instagram, Becoming Bonsai. That's going to be basically her her name, or her what she calls, it's going to call her content. So you can just look up that to find Carmen's stuff. And of course, go over to purplepotsociety.org and become a member. You do not have to be a woman to support. You can be any gender and support women in bonsai. And also, quite admittedly, because of the Purple Pot Society, I have collected quite a few purple pots. So it's a fun thing to do. I like pots of different colors. You know, that's both literal and to kind of deal a little, another pun there. But yeah, anyway, so that's it for this week. And I will catch up with you guys on the next one.